Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Mukul Kumar to the broadcast. Mukul is the Managing Director of the IT Practice at the Corporate Executive Board. In that role, he has grown the infrastructure advisory portfolio from $10 million to $30 million in approximately 600 clients. In addition to his current role, Mukul's past roles at CEB have included time spent as Practice Manager and Chief Research Officer of the Infrastructure Executive Council and Research Director of the CFO Executive Board. Prior to joining CEB, Mukul was an engagement manager at McKinsey & Company, where he developed and implemented strategies in various industries, including financial services, telecommunications, industrials, and not-for-profits. Prior to his time at McKinsey, Mukul was a lecturer in international economics and macroeconomics for graduate courses at the Woodrow Wilson School at Princeton University, and he also spent time as a consultant to the World Bank. In addition to the many studies that Mukul has authored or co-authored at CEB, he's also written numerous papers and books in topics ranging from technology to business to economics. Mukul has a PhD in economics from Princeton University and a BS in mathematics and economics from MIT. I recently caught up with Mukul in his office in Arlington, Virginia, and our conversation focused on world-class IT Principle 1, people, as we discussed Mukul's five different roles that senior leaders should play relative to people and a variety of topics related to culture. Principle 2, infrastructure, as we discussed infrastructure as a potential source of competitive advantage. Principle 4, IT and business alignment, as we discussed innovation and how IT leaders should learn to fail fast. And given Mukul's background in economics, I also asked him for his perspective on CIO's priorities in light of the current economic malaise, as well as a variety of other topics. Mukul Kumar, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thanks, Peter. Good to be with you.
Excellent. Mukul, in your current role as Managing Director of the IT Practice, you spend a lot of time with CIOs in the U.S., abroad. And I'm wondering, as you've met with these various IT executives, what you see as some of the top items that are rising to the top of their agendas these days.
Peter, as you'd imagine, sitting several weeks after the financial crisis has unfolded across global markets, there's two items that are high on the list. The first, very much having to do with responding to the higher cost of capital that companies are now facing, and bringing out with that the associated recessionary playbook. How do we deal with the significant cost elements that across the board industries are having to deal with? That's one big area, and it's got several elements. I can get into those. The second big area is still a continued focus on what are the next generation opportunities for transformational change. Mm-hmm. In many ways, this time of crisis is a time of opportunity. It's a time to think about the next generational transformational ideas. And so a lot of CIOs are asking questions in terms of where are the next set of areas where we bring about transformation.
Okay.
So those are the two big buckets within each, just to give you a flavor.
Please.
Within sort of the recessionary playbook, cost of capital side, folks looking very much at how do you preserve costly capital right now? So how do we think about portfolio reprioritizations? How do we think about bite-sizing projects so that we can get more out of them? How do we think about hurdle rates in terms of payback period, in terms of much faster ROI than we've thought of in the last years? Thinking a ton about risk in the IT supply chain. What if some of our vendors cease to exist in the next weeks and months? How do we protect our operations, our companies? Mm-hmm. And probably third, and this is going to play out across many months, I would say, is providing much deeper visibility and transparency into the cost base. Unprecedented levels of transparency into IT's cost structure, into IT's income statement and balance sheet, if you will. We've had to do more and more of that across the years, but CIOs finding themselves with unprecedented transparency needs at this point.
If we could linger on that point just a moment, Mukul, does that mean that CIOs are adopting better governance practices as a result of this? Is this an opportunity to rethink the way in which they go about prioritizing their activities, kicking off projects, managing those projects while they're going through the life cycle, and so forth?
In my experience across the last 3, 4, 5 years, there's been a lot of emphasis on governance. Mm-hmm. A lot of CIOs across the board have been thinking about how to get governance practices in order. But thinking about a next generation of financial visibility certainly will bring in new governance practices with it as well. The questions of how do we variabilize our IT cost structures? how do we provide a better sense of the links between demand and supply for various pieces of technology, for various technology capabilities, mm-hmm. will then require us to have new capabilities in terms of the governance of that supply. Should we have tiered pricing? Should we have tiered services? How do we manage chargebacks? Some of those questions, which we've dealt with at some level for various years, now take on a much finer point to them.
Hmm. That makes a lot of sense.
So those are sort of the three themes that I just mentioned in the on the cost-related side, if you will, the higher cost of capital. Perhaps the most interesting ones, kind of once you get past survival mode and cost management mode, are questions around where's the transformational change? And certainly one of the things I'm hearing from the vast majority of CIOs I'm talking to today is there's an unprecedented demand in terms of business partners asking for help because IT has become ever more integral to the operations of our businesses. It really is the central nervous system, if you will. And as our business units are thinking about pricing, about segmentation, about all of the ways in which they are going to respond to the current crisis and to the recession that the US and the Eurozone find themselves in at this point in time, they're all turning to their information base. They're all turning to IT and asking for more help. So thinking about how we really manage the data and the information assets of the corporation, doing it in a structured way, has risen to the fore. That's number one. Mm-hmm. Number two is around collaboration strategies. As our workforces continue to get more mobile, certainly as we start to see travel restrictions and some cost themes get imposed on our workforces,
yes.
finding better ways to collaborate globally remains important, and it's a big challenge for us to solve. Mm-hmm. So that's number two I'd put in the list. And number three, and this is an enormous one, is really thinking about the future of corporate IT. What is the next generation value proposition? CIOs have worked through being, we used to call it the chief information officer. It was all about cost.
Right.
They've at times been the chief IT officer. The question really is it time to live up to the chief information officer moniker? Mm-hmm. Is the future really about the appropriate governance structures for information? How do we become the right data stewards? Mm. How do we support in very flexible yet institutionalized ways the information needs across the company? And solving that value proposition has become urgent now. It's a theme that folks have been thinking about, but there's a much greater urgency about it right now.
That makes a lot of sense. So it sounds as though I'm hearing you say that business partners have a greater appreciation, perhaps, than in recessions past for what IT can bring to the table, what IT's value is for the organization. I know that from our own experience, thinking through, for instance, the downturn earlier in the early part of this decade, that IT was an easy place to slash budgets, to slash people and so forth. Am I hearing you say that the business partners now are seeing IT as sort of an enabler, as a potentially even a strategic element to withstand and weather the storm?
Let's be careful on this one. It's always easy to come back and ask for cost cutting, and mm-hmm. IT will have to do its share of that.
Exactly.
I hear in many of my CIOs the sigh of relief around this downturn. Boy, are we glad this one is not of our making. It feels a little different than 2001, when it was much closer to home.
Yes.
And most IT organizations have spent a lot of time in the last 7 years working on governance, working on cost management, making cost management a way of life, and therefore have earned credibility from that. And this one will feel a little different. Our business partners are indeed coming with much more of a tone of, how do we solve these problems? How do we get help in terms of the data and information from IT? Recognizing that IT is going to have to play its part mm-hmm. in reducing costs.
Yes.
But it's going to have a huge role to play in enabling others to cut costs, or enabling others across the enterprise to grow their top lines.
Yes. Very good. In the recent past, you were the practice manager of the infrastructure executives here at the Corporate Executive Board, and so infrastructure clearly is an area of expertise for you, and I wonder if we can linger on that topic for a moment. Infrastructure seems to be one of those areas that a lot of organizations are grappling with as to what is the future of infrastructure. I know there are a lot of clients of ours, a lot of notable companies around the country and around the world who have thought about it and elected to outsource their infrastructure. And clearly, of course, there's not a one-size-fits-all solution or one response that all organizations ought to adhere to. But I wonder if there are some basic principles that you think that organizations should adhere to as they contemplate whether or not infrastructure is something that is strategic to them or not.
You're right. I have spent a number of years with heads of infrastructure across the world, and it's a space that's near and dear to my heart. And infrastructure definitely has a core role, a role of comparative advantage to play for many, many different business models. In many ways, that's a question that's independent of how you choose to provision infrastructure. Mm-hmm. You may choose to provision it insourced through your own employees and owning the assets, or choose to do it through somebody in the supply chain. But the question of actually sorting out how critical is infrastructure to the value proposition of the company comes front and center. Mm-hmm. I can think of various companies that we can look at. You can think of somebody like Google and the role that having data centers and having infrastructure assets closer to their customers so that they can promise searches that happen in very small periods of time.
Yes.
Has been a core part of their proposition. You can think of various of our clients in the financial services space who've actually sorted out the deep importance of resilient, highly available architectures and infrastructure assets mm-hmm. that again provide trust, confidence, and credibility to their customers.
Yes.
So you can work through various examples across various industries of the criticality of infrastructure assets. And it'd be a mistake for us to walk away from that criticality.
Mm-hmm.
I think at the same time, there's a second source of deep value that infrastructure provides, and that comes by way of the tools that infrastructure is providing across the employees of the corporation. So the laptops, the Blackberries, the cell phones, the telecommunications devices of various kinds eventually become the productivity toolkit that our employees are carrying. And in a day and age where more and more work is about ideas, the knowledge economy that gets talked about so much, if you will, the productivity of those workers is critical to the success of our companies.
Mm-hmm.
And in many ways, those infrastructure elements are the common glue, the culture, if you will, that makes one corporation special relative to another. And so being able to think about investments in that glue, in that culture, in that distinctive voice that with which our employees engage with each other is critical as well. So two key themes, I would say, in terms of why infrastructure is so valuable. I would, however, delink them from outsourcing or insourcing.
Mm.
We really have to be open to having the best scale provider, the best manager of given sets of assets, provision technologies. Those choices should really be kept independent.
Mm-hmm. A great point. I think in addition to those, I think it's still important to note that infrastructure in many ways is still the most technical of aspects within IT, and perhaps in some ways the most inaccessible to a lot of business partners. And I'm wondering what you have seen among the infrastructure clients that you've dealt with around the world as ways in which they can communicate the value that the infrastructure brings, the way in which different investments that they're contemplating ought to be weighed right up against marketing investments that may be more, in fact, more accessible to the average business person, for example.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons that I have actually really enjoyed working with the infrastructure constituency is it's that perception they have of being the hard hat guys, the guys with the pocket protectors there, and having to deal with the world of marketing on the other side, marketing projects that they compete with. The two themes that we've harped on for several years now, finding better ways to communicate in the language of the business,
mm-hmm.
really stepping out of those technical pieces of jargon and speaking the words of our business partners, and really coming at it top down, asking the question of what value do we bring to business processes? Mm-hmm. What is the central role of infrastructure in speeding up a given process, or bringing scale to a given process, or reducing the risk in a given process? And once we get to speaking in that terminology, I've seen a couple of great case examples in terms of really having those lights go on in terms of communicating the value of infrastructure. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of my heads of infrastructure talked about it as their funding committee, which went from being antagonists. It really used to be the theme of, boy, we just like the cost of infrastructure to be lower, to becoming advocates.
I see.
Because this particular company started to use a process where they think about the risk to the corporation relative to the investment that they were asking for in infrastructure.
I see.
And the risk to the corporation is enormous. For most of our corporations, if IT infrastructure is down for an hour, 2 hours, 4 hours, we come to a screeching halt.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to establish that trade-off of risk versus investment value was critical to getting out of that technical jargon world and into a world where infrastructure projects now became comparable to a marketing project.
Mm.
And that's where success comes. It's hard work. It requires infrastructure teams to think in ways they're sometimes not comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a transformation that started to happen and I think is picking up good momentum.
That's exciting. That's very exciting. Let's switch gears, if we could, and talk about people. In the past, you've referred to five different roles that senior leaders should play relative to people. And I'm wondering if you can take a moment and describe those and elaborate on that a bit.
Yeah, I think it's a piece of work that we actually did earlier this year. We'd looked at almost 50 different companies, 1,500 senior managers, had asked deep, deep questions in terms of what makes for effective senior leaders and really what lets senior leaders effectively build the next generation of talent behind them. And there were five key roles that came out.
Mm-hmm.
The roles of performance advisor, of network broker, experience optimizer, and career champion. So five, I mean, and you'll actually see they're up on my dartboard here,
mm-hmm.
Because I think they're ones for all of us to live by. How do we help our teams have a sense of what their performance is, hold up the mirror of performance right in front of them, let them assess themselves. How do we build their networks for them? Particularly true in the IT space where, true to the stereotype, we don't build good enough relationships across the enterprise. How do we help that happen?
Important.
How do we really build up the right set of experiences for each of our employees? How do we help find the right experience at the right time and encourage the right learning to happen from it?
Mm-hmm.
And then lastly, how do we champion careers? How do we make sure we don't fall into the trap that I've called the IT talent shield paradox?
Mm-hmm.
If you shield your talent in the hope of retaining it in your narrow world, the likelihood is those individuals actually leave, and they leave the company.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes a double loss.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we make sure we're championing those careers so that people stay with us? So those are five roles, and we found just focusing on those five roles has a tremendous impact in terms of building up the leadership bench for CIOs.
That's great. Can we linger on talent management for a moment? I know that it's an area of focus for you as well, and I wonder if you can talk about some of the themes that you see emerging out of that particular area in terms of what successful organizations are doing to ensure that they have the appropriate talent for the next generation of the company. And making sure that IT is thinking about where they will be in 5 or 10 years from a talent perspective.
It's a great theme in one of the big areas of opportunity in today's environment. Given the crisis, there's a lot of room to be able to think about talent moves that we hadn't thought about in the past. It's a buy low opportunity, if you will, in financial terms.
Uh-huh.
And I know in your model, in the principles of world-class IT, you talk about recruiting and training and retaining. We've looked across each of those elements. One of the areas that cuts across all of those elements is how we think of high potential employees. And so let me dwell on that for a second. It has some of these elements in each of those areas.
Great.
Typically, CIOs would suggest they need roughly 20% of their next level folks to be high potential, so that they can have the appropriate leadership bench for the future. Our quantitative work showed that only about 8% of people have a probability greater than 60-70% of being successful at the next level.
Incredible.
So a huge gap,
yes,
between what we need and what we actually have. There's a lot of detail in the work we did around what defines high potentials. And really what we discovered was, when you look at the ability, the aspiration, and the engagement, three attributes across individuals. Individuals can fail on one or more of the three. And CIOs and their leadership teams have to really think hard about how they're going to build up the next generation talent, mm-hmm, in terms of each of those three areas. So how are we going to inspire people to aspire to more?
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to create much greater engagement across our teams and with individuals, a culture of engagement, if you will, so that people really want to stay with us, people are learning from each other, and again, want to aspire to the next generation. Ability, much harder to change. Mm-hmm. Certainly there's things we can do in terms of skill building, but we also found ability is sort of one of these binary elements where people either have it or they don't. It's much harder to inflect.
Do you see a greater number of organizations who are cross-pollinating with the business and therefore taking in people who have typically business backgrounds but have an inclination or an interest in IT and bringing them in, and vice versa, taking people who have technical backgrounds, education as well as professional, but have an interest in one of the business disciplines and cross-pollinating across those? Have you seen any?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And there's a desire for a lot more. Let me give you a couple examples. One of the areas of IT that's been exporting talent, if you will, is the project management office.
Mm-hmm.
It's in many, many organizations, I find. It's a source of talent that's very well perceived across the company. CIOs, in fact, sometimes worry about how much of their talent, how much of their great project management talent they lose,
mm-hmm,
but they very quickly realize it pays off, that talent eventually comes back, and it builds relationships across the business. Looking at it the other way, business partners coming into IT, in many ways that's happening at the top of the house. If I think about the newest trend in terms of where do the next generation of CIOs come from, and as you know, it's a role that turns over very quickly.
Exactly.
The average tenure of a CIO, less than 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the biggest new entrant I'm seeing is folks coming in from marketing or from operations, other aspects of the organization, being asked to come into IT, which is now just such a central role. So
mm-hmm,
right at the very top of the house.
That's great. That's very interesting. I wonder if we can move over to innovation and talk a little bit about what you've seen in terms of innovation from the IT perspective. I know that you've talked about in the past the need for IT to adopt the principle of failing fast and failing cheaply. And I wonder if you can kind of delve into some of the notions behind that.
Sure. It's across the last couple of years, for sure, we've seen a lot of interest in how do we build cultures of innovation? How do we change the mindset from just cost to thinking about innovation as well, because the returns are so high? And the theme of fail fast, fail cheap is one of building credibility. It's making sure that we use our resources wisely. So we take the time to experiment. We need that. We need to be able to incubate ideas. But we have to make sure that we're looking at viable ideas, viable from a business perspective, from an operational perspective, as well as from a technology perspective. And far too often in the past, the processes, the stage gates, if you will, that were set up, wanted to make sure that ideas were being tested against all of these elements, were being simultaneously tested against all of these elements. What we found, and what we found from a couple of our case exemplars in the work we've done, is really focusing on the sequence. First test the business viability, next the operational, and finally the technological viability. It's a little bit of a counterculture for IT,
mm-hmm,
but if an idea is not viable in business terms, why bother testing the technological viability?
Yes.
And so that's the theme of fail fast. Fail as soon as you know it's not viable. It lets you fail cheaply, and therefore gives you the credibility when you do find the ideas that are making it through all of your stage gates, the business, the operational, and the technological, that much more credibility to execute in it, that much larger from the impact on the corporation.
So in some ways, what you're advocating is that IT think of itself almost like an R&D function of some sorts. So the extent to which it is a source of innovation, thinking about bringing a lot of new ideas to the table, but recognizing that a lot of them will fail, but do so, get to that failure point more as quickly as possible.
Absolutely. I think one of the big themes for IT in terms of governance and some of the improvement we've made across the years, but step changes to be made in terms of bringing in best practices from the R&D side, from the marketing side, mm-hmm. from our various peer functions that do this for a living, mm-hmm. that do it on behalf of our corporation. We need to bring those ideas into our own business, mm-hmm. the business of providing good data, good information, as well as technology tools on behalf of the entire enterprise.
In your response, Mukul, you understandably talked a lot about culture and the need to change culture. And I wonder if we can switch gears ever so slightly and talk about the definition of culture itself. I know a lot of IT organizations haven't necessarily defined their culture in a way that's meaningful enough that the preponderance of IT associates would understand what it is exactly that IT stands for. And I wonder if you can linger on that a little bit and talk about why it is important that organizations focus on defining their culture.
So the theme of culture is an important one, a critical one, I'd argue, and perhaps because it sometimes feels soft, feels touchy-feely, many IT folks are want to stay away from it. I'd actually suggest, especially at a time in today's times where employee engagement has fallen by over 40% across the last couple months, when we think of the fear, the uncertainty, and doubt that prevails out there because of outsourcing, because of offshoring, the pendulum swings we've seen from cost to innovation back to cost, is that there's a lot of factors that have conspired against getting the best levels of productivity out of our people. In fact, I'd call this about very hard returns. This is not about a soft, squishy topic. Mm-hmm. This is about hard, measurable productivity gains. How do we help our people get beyond very narrow operational metrics? We often use uptime or help desk calls or various other such metrics that are very narrow to motivate our people. Don't help them see how they belong to a much greater entity across IT, across the corporation. And people are motivated by the vision of what they're getting done. What is the greater purpose that they're working against? It's to achieve that purpose that we need to set cultures in place. Mm-hmm. Norms, rules, behaviors, or what I think of when I think of culture. This is,
yes.
I'm not talking about the engagement of let's lock people up in a room and come up with great grand mission statements. Mm-hmm. It really is figuring out what are the working rules of engagement across various aspects of the organization. So take an example. Take something like an SAP rollout. Big project in most IT organizations. How do we use that moment to create a better culture across the organization? And frankly, I would think in today's terms, and we're working with a client on this, how do you use Web 2 technologies as a great way of rolling out that project but building culture? Building culture in the sense of creating better ways of getting feedback, mm-hmm. with regard to rollout. Creating better ways of interaction in terms of problem solving around the rollout across various disconnected aspects of IT. Creating a better mechanism for getting new ideas for next generation changes to be made. Using blogs, using wikis, using polling mechanisms.
Yes.
Using all of these new channels of communication and collaboration we have to build those norms, those rules, those working behaviors, which will deliver significant improvements in productivity across our entire IT employee base.
That's great. And as I hear you talk about this, I see this as not only something that provides the appropriate incentives and mechanisms for existing employees to think of something, think of the definitions of the IT organization as something bigger and broader than themselves, but something that they're very much a part of, but also something that perhaps helps in the onboarding process of new employees, in communicating to people who, through the recruiting process, as to what this organization stands for, and therefore why perhaps you might want to be a part of it.
Absolutely. I think of it sometimes as, how do we go from the isolated pools of knowledge that we have, individuals that carry all of this knowledge in themselves, to becoming more integrated communities, mm-hmm. integrated ways of getting onboarded into a way of doing things. Mm-hmm. And that really becomes the defining metaphor, the culture, if you will, mm-hmm. of the organization, the rules of engagement that allow every new employee, that allow anybody in any part of the world across our distributed workforce, or even allow our outsourcing partners who are working on delivering certain services for us, everybody can work with the same understanding of how things get done mm-hmm. in our organization.
Yes.
Most of our efforts, most of our waste comes from a lack of communication, the inability to finish things as soon as we start them. It's the rework that we have in the back and forth loops that I know you've seen, I've certainly seen across many, many of my clients.
Yes.
Many, many rework loops, misunderstandings that prevent us from actually getting to outcomes. If we have those rules, those norms, those working behaviors that have been set right from day one as employees on board, mm-hmm. We're going to get huge productivity gains.
It makes a lot of sense. As a closing topic, I know your itinerary just over the past few weeks had you on multiple continents, and I know that most months it seems as though you're on a plane to some far-flung place. And I wonder, as you've had a chance now to live in many different places, to work in many different places, if you see from an IT perspective any differences, any meaningful differences in the various geographies in which you've operated.
Peter, I guess you also know this about my background. I've grown up and lived across the world. And perhaps even as I broadly observe similarities and differences in IT and in these themes of what does world-class IT look like for
yes.
corporations headquartered in the US or Europe or Asia, I find more similarities than difference. I find that the principles that we're going to use, the goals, the metrics, look far more similar than different. Now, there is real difference in terms of how companies go about change. So I'd say from a CIO level perspective, change management often looks different. I find many of my European CIOs to be more focused on getting the right consensus. They sometimes have more distributed structures, and they'll make sure they spend enormous amounts of time on that cohesion, collaboration, consensus generation before change happens.
Yes.
It progresses a little bit differently sometimes in U.S. headquartered companies, and I'm making very broad, sweeping stereotypes here. but you do see that. Metrics-based companies that can make change happen on the basis of incentives and metrics. Mm-hmm. So you find some of those changes or some of those differences in terms of change management. But fundamentally, with regards to aspiration, with regards to the basic principles of governance, I find far more similarity than difference. It's a convergence that's happened quite significantly across the last couple of decades.
That's very interesting. Well, McCool, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a great conversation. I certainly have enjoyed it. And thank you for sharing your views on the Forum on World Class IT.
It's a pleasure, Peter. Thank you.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. This forum has been created so that we might have a series of discussions with a variety of IT leaders to understand, evaluate, and define world-class performance as it relates to MetaStrategy's five principles of world-class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it's nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in a reactive mode, constantly fighting fires. If systems and hardware work reliably, on the other hand, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It's important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important first and foremost that the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and quality assurance, through to support and all the other aspects of the IT department, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important then that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business. If the three prior principles, namely people, infrastructure, and project and portfolio management, are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial aspect to corporations, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metisstrategy.com, or please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metisstrategy.com. Thank you.